up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
According to the IRS, filing taxes for the first time under the new tax law should be seamless for 90% of Americans who file electronically. As we're almost a month into 2019, it's also a good time to examine your withholdings. That's at least according to certified public accountant Paul Schwartz. I had a chance to chat with him, and he says it's always a good time around the beginning of the year to take a look at what's being withheld from your paychecks.
My belief is that you really don't want to get big refunds. You want to make sure that your exemptions that you claim at work are just enough to cover you for your tax, but not to create a big refund. We feel that big refunds are basically allowing the government to hold on to your money, and when they pay you, they don't pay you a dime of interest. So we try to discourage people from getting big refunds. Unfortunately, sometimes people really count on that big refund, and I certainly try to educate my clients to not count on the big refund and have the money all year in their pockets and do the right things with it. But certainly you want to gather your receipts as best you can and also make sure that you've done your best to contribute to a retirement plan, either an IRA, traditional IRA, Roth IRA, or perhaps your 401k plan at work. Those are really the best things that you can do at this point.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you for joining us. Joining me at the 50-caliber microphone today is co-host Air Force vet Josh Lang. What's up, Josh?
It's Civil Air Patrol Tri-Wing Encampment Cadre Selection Weekend for my oldest airman. So by the time we reconvene here next week, I'll know if I have the new Standards and Evaluations NCO living under my roof. If Jordan does get selected for the position, that will certainly help him in keeping his own bed made and room in order. And I think I'll have him inspect his younger brother's beds and room, too. Thank you, Civil Air Patrol.
Good to hear that, Josh. We'll hear from Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby as he shares some warrant wisdom. And Marine vet Skip Coriel seems to be a happy guy. Life going good in the book business, Skip?
Oh, it's going fantastic. I just finished up that last book, Jack Pine Strong. And I've already started writing my next book.
Ooh, it's flowing, huh?
It is, yeah. It's called Concealed Carry for Christians. Totally different than I've ever done before.
Well, certainly something that I strongly believe in, so amen, bro. Here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss the Tet Offensive that began in Vietnam at about this time in 1968. A major battle and a war that our troops won, but you wouldn't know it. Professor Paul Moreno from Hillsdale College will then review our Constitution for us. Then we're going to meet some brave veterans who now support Gold Star families. And we'll review our movie of the month with Diane Raver from Garden State Film Festival.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
Troops, as you know, on each show we honor a deceased military person, not the superstars with the average soldier, sailor, marine, airman, or coastie. They don't have to have served in combat, but they do have to have served honorably, active duty, guard, or reserve. I have some but need more vets to honor. To nominate someone, send me about 250 words summarizing his or her service, and I'll read it on the show. Send the information to me, Denny, at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We do welcome your input to the show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Now it's time for news and comment by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. First, the news. What's first, Josh?
The federal government shutdown is over. For now. President Trump reached an agreement with Congress on Friday afternoon to put federal workers back to work and to make sure their paychecks, including back pay, get distributed ASAP. February 15th is the new date to mark on your calendar. That is the deadline the president has set for a bipartisan panel of representatives and senators to come up with a border security and immigration solution after listening to input from DHS, Border Patrol, ICE, and other law enforcement. Trump stated the resulting bill must pass both the House and Senate by his deadline, or he's threatening another shutdown and to declare border security a national emergency, which will likely result in the Army Corps of Engineers beginning construction on additional border control structures, including fencing and walls. Did you know that an African-American woman from Virginia was instrumental in creating a convenience we use every day and almost can't live without? Yes, indeed. Dr. Gladys West invented GPS, the Global Positioning System, and has finally received the recognition she deserves by being inducted into the Air Force Space and Missile Pioneers Hall of Fame by the United States Air Force during a ceremony held at the Pentagon. The 87-year-old scholar knew as a child she did not want to work in the fields, picking tobacco, corn, and cotton, or in a factory, beating tobacco leaves for cigarettes and pipes like her parents did. She said, quote, "I realized I had to get an education to get out," end quote. And that she did, studying math at Virginia State and graduating top of her class. She became a teacher. In 1956, West began to work at Naval Surface Warfare Center. There, she collected data from satellites. And that job is what eventually led to the development of the Global Positioning System. In 2017, Captain Godfrey Weeks, the then commanding officer at the Naval Surface Warfare Center Dahlgren Division, described the integral role West played in a Black History Month message. He wrote, quote, "She rose through the ranks, worked on the satellite geodesy, and contributed to the accuracy of GPS and the measurement of satellite data." As Gladys West started her career as a mathematician at Dahlgren in 1956, she likely had no idea that her work would impact the world for decades to come. End quote.
This lady is a role model for all Americans.
Well, the United States has, on numerous occasions, accused Russia of violating the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, or INF, Russia believes the U.S. is undermining another one, the new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. In a recent letter to U.S. lawmakers, Russian officials listed a number of alleged problems, which Moscow says could hurt negotiations to extend the New START Pact in 2021. The Wall Street Journal first reported the letter's contents. The unsigned letter asserts two main issues. Russia claims it has not been able to verify the conversion of some B-52H Stratofortress bombers that were slated to be changed to a conventional-only role. Another treaty provision requires the conversion of some Trident II submarine-launched ballistic missile launchers, something Russia says it has not been able to corroborate since 2015, according to the translated letter verified by the journal. The document states, quote, "We believe it would be helpful to inform the U.S. Congress about the Russian stands on outstanding issues on the basis of assessments previously communicated to the U.S. End quote. While fighting in Iraq, the Army failed to grasp the significance of the country's sectarian divisions and tended to penalize its own innovative leaders, according to the service's long-awaited history of the war that claimed over 4,000 service members' lives. The study titled "The U.S. Army in the Iraq War," published by the Army War College, was commissioned in 2013 by retired General Raymond Odierno when he was the service's chief. The study highlights numerous failures during the 8-year conflict, including a lack of awareness among military leaders of the sectarian, social, and political dynamics in the country that would fuel much of the violence. The critique, which is over 1,000 pages long and contains hundreds of declassified documents, also says efforts to train Iraq's military were insufficient and led to a force that was over-reliant on the U.S. The decisions by commanders, often made in consensus, seemed reasonable at the time they were made, but nonetheless added up over time to a failure to achieve our strategic objectives. The study also added, quote, examining the reasoning behind these decisions and the systemic failures that produced them should be the first task in analyzing the Iraq War's lessons, end quote. Authored by a group of Army officers, the study also criticizes the Army for failing to recognize effective leaders on the battlefield and an institutional tendency to punish the best innovators.
This is a long-awaited document, and it sounds like it's well-written with no attempt to cover mistakes. We have to learn from our successes and our mistakes.
The White House has announced that a second summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will take place later next month. President Trump met with a top North Korean official, Kim Yong-chol, to discuss denuclearization and a second summit. The White House said in a statement, the president looks forward to meeting with Chairman Kim at a place to be announced at a later date. The face-to-face came after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with Kim Yong-chol, North Korea's lead negotiator, in the nation's capital to negotiate terms that could lead to a second nuclear summit between Trump and Pyongyang leader Kim Jong-un. Pompeo and Kim Yong-chol didn't shake hands or respond to reporters' questions, but did smile during a photo opportunity ahead of their meeting. In a statement shortly before the meeting, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said, quote, they will discuss relations between the two countries and continued progress on North Korea's final, fully verified denuclearization, end quote.
This is good news for the whole world. And that's the news. This is Colonel Danny Gillum coming up on Frontlines of Freedom. I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some war and wisdom. Then we'll discuss the Constitution that we veterans took an oath to support and defend. At ease, troops, take a break.
Spartan Ash holds a special place in its heart for Honor and Remember. As a national partner with Honor and Remember, Spartan Ash is deeply committed to never forgetting those who paid the ultimate price in service to our country.
The flag serves as a symbol of remembrance, and Spartan Ash flies the Honor and Remember flag at all facilities. The flag artwork is on our fleet of tractor trailers, which travel nearly 67 million miles each year.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your home defense tip of the week. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, your front door is the number one preferred entry point for home invaders. On average, it takes 5 seconds to break down your solid steel security door. To prevent this, reinforce your door frame by doubling the 2x4s and by using longer, case-hardened screws to attach the hinges to the door frame. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
From Sky Pass Entertainment comes the least of these, the Graham Stain story.
The law states that no person shall convert or attempt to convert any person from one religious faith to another. And yet not one missionary has been charged.
When speculation mounts that a local missionary is converting locals to Christianity in India.
Leprosy is the veil behind which Staines operates, the tool he uses.
A journalist must choose between his own ambition and the truth.
You bring me evidence of illegal conversion, I'll give you a permanent position.
One day I'll find the proof of him converting the tribals.
We can't make any mistakes.
They have this law for a reason.
Hello, we must pray.
Based on the incredible true story.
You can still write the truth.
What is the truth?
Write about the work, not about me.
The least of these. The Graham Stain story. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 1st with a special sneak peek Thursday, January 31st. For theaters and tickets, go to theleastofthese.movie.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Honoring Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. A Front Lines of Freedom salute to one of our show's sponsors, Honor and Remember. Our nation must never forget those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms. This is the mission of Honor and Remember, a nonprofit based in Virginia, with support from their national sponsor, Spartan Nash, the leading distributor to U.S. commissaries and fifth largest food distributor. Learn more about how you continue the mission at honorandremember.org. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Regular listeners, especially those who've read my book, know that I'm a Vietnam veteran and that the biggest and most horrific battles I was ever in were during the Tet 1968 battles around the city of Hue. The Tet Offensive began on 30 January with coordinated communist attacks all across South Vietnam. Now, I had returned to the U.S. from my first tour in Vietnam a bit over a year before the Tet Offensive. I was given command of a rifle company in the 101st Airborne Division, and in December of 1967, that entire division deployed to Vietnam. By mid-January 1968, my brigade was operating from a small base near the walled city of Hue. Hanoi had announced in October that it would observe a truce for the traditional Tet holiday, and the South Vietnamese military made plans to allow some recreational leave for about half their forces. The attacks that began on 30 January were the largest communist offensive of the war. An estimated 80,000 troops of the North Vietnamese Army and National Liberation Front, the Viet Cong, attacked dozens of cities, towns, and military bases. The most spectacular episode occurred when a group of NLF commandos blasted through the wall surrounding the American Embassy in Saigon and unsuccessfully attempted to seize the building. Most of the attacks were turned back, with communist forces suffering heavy losses. Battles continued to rage throughout the country for weeks. Indeed, the fight to reclaim the city of Hue from communist troops was particularly destructive. It was there that I saw old men, women, and children who'd been lined up against a wall by the enemy and shot. I'd never seen that before or since. In the weeks of fighting that we did then, the enemy fought hard, but they never won a single engagement. American and South Vietnamese forces lost over 3,000 men during the offensive. Estimates are the communists lost as many as 40,000 men. By January of 68, the U.S. had about 410,000 military personnel in South Vietnam. They were joined by an Australian task force, a Royal Thai Army regiment, two South Korean infantry divisions, and a Korean Marine brigade. And the South Vietnamese strength was about 350,000 regulars in the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps. And they were supported by 151,000 South Vietnamese regional forces and 149,000-man South Vietnamese popular force, which was regional and local militias. We were not totally surprised by this. Indeed, General Frederick Weiland had invited reporters to his headquarters in a week before the Tet Offensive to alert them that a major enemy attack was coming, either just before or just after Tet. He said the Vietnamese had too much respect for the holidays to attack during Tet itself. He was wrong. Although the U.S. commander in Vietnam, General Westmoreland's appraisal of the military situation was good, he made himself look foolish by continually maintaining in his belief that Khe Sanh was the real objective of the North Vietnamese, and that the 155 attacks by 84,000 troops was a diversion. One reporter reasonably asked, how could any effort against Saigon, especially downtown Saigon, be a diversion? General Westmoreland was not one of America's finest leaders. During these operations, the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese followed a similar pattern. Rocket or mortar attacks were closely followed by a mass ground assault conducted by battalion strength elements of the Viet Cong, sometimes supported by North Vietnamese regulars. These forces would join with local cadres who served as guides who would lead the regulars to the most senior South Vietnamese headquarters and radio stations. The operations, however, were not well coordinated at the local level. By daylight, almost all the communist forces had been driven from their objectives. 2 months later, the North Vietnamese commander concluded that he had been defeated everywhere and considered withdrawing to North Vietnam and ending the war. He related this in his memoirs. But one thing kept him in the war. The American media concluded that the North Vietnamese had really won the battle, and the American people believed it. Now, a part of this new attitude in the American public was contributed by General Westmoreland's very inaccurate reports that we were winning big and would soon pull out of Vietnam. The disappointment of the surprisingly strong communist offensive and the horrible press coverage turned the attitude of many U.S. citizens. Indeed, the majority of the U.S. media I interacted with in Vietnam were clearly hostile to our troops and our successes and did not report our regular victories to the American people. Finally, when the decision was made to withdraw U.S. troops from South Vietnam, the communists were clearly on the defensive and the South Vietnamese were capable of defending their own country. What they needed was a resupply of weapons and ammunition, which we promised them. Unfortunately, our Democratic-controlled Congress refused to provide any resupply to the South Vietnamese, and the North won the war. It's clear to me that our soldiers in Vietnam did their duty and did it honorably and well and deserved much, much more than the spit many American civilians directed towards us when we returned. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. We get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Colonel, I just heard that the world's most expensive fighter jet is flying with parts made from a 3D printer. Last month, maintainers at Hill Air Force Base in Utah, for the first time ever, installed a metallic 3D printed bracket on an operational $150 million F-22 aircraft. Now, this is not the 3D printer you can run out and buy at the local office supply store, but it uses a lot of the same technology and processes. So if the 3D printed titanium piece will hold up, the part's going to get installed on all the F-22 aircraft, and the use of 3D printed parts will expand with the goal of reducing the downtime for these maintenance-prone jets. Now, although 3D printing of parts is a first for the stealthy F-22, harnessing 3D printed technology for use in combat jets isn't new here in the United States. Last April, the Marine Corps flew an F-35 Lightning aircraft with a part supplied by a 3D printer to replace a worn plastic bumper on the plane's landing gear door. The part was printed, approved, and installed within just a few days. This eliminated a much longer wait for the replacement part to be shipped from the United States. Also, the Department of Defense has used additive manufacturing from everything from Humvee door handles and rifle grips to gas mask modifications. Now, unlike the Marine's plastic bumper, the 3D printed bracket in the F-22 was made using a titanium powder and a laser that built the part layer by layer. The new printed bracket won't corrode, like the Corone Progen aluminum part it's replacing, and that part is located in the kick panel assembly of the cockpit. The old part is replaced nearly 80% of the time during routine maintenance, so it obviously corrodes quite a bit. The new 3D printed part will be monitored while it's in service and inspected when the aircraft returns to Hill Air Force Base for maintenance. If validated, the part will be installed on all the F-22 aircraft when they undergo maintenance. The Air Force has said it has at least five more metallic 3D printed parts it plans to test on the F-22. And if they can start 3D printing more complicated parts, it could reduce the maintenance time for the F-22 by as much as 60 to 70 days. The Air Force did not say how much time or money 3D printing could save in F-22 maintenance. But the technology does give the maintainers the ability to acquire replacement parts on short notice without minimum order quantities, which of course is an issue, especially with the F-22, because of how small the fleet actually is. In fact, maintenance problems and the size of the F-22 squadrons have contributed to low aircraft availability rates service-wide, and just maybe 3D printing can change that. Isn't technology pretty awesome? For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss our nation's Constitution with Professor Paul Moreno from Hillsdale College. Then we'll meet the vets who created Legacies Alive, a support group for Gold Star families. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You are standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for planks. Let's do a minute each and do 10, then stand at ease.
Now,
Now is the time, and wherever you are is the place. The Citadel makes it easier to earn your degree by offering master's degrees, graduate certificates, and undergraduate degree completion programs entirely online. Flexible scheduling makes these programs convenient for working professionals. Continuing the Citadel's legacy of academic excellence, classes are held to the same high standards that consistently name the Citadel the number one master's granting public college in the South. Online, on your time. Visit citadel.edu/online.
I started going cold turkey, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it.
I do it all the time. I stopped by locking it in my glove compartment.
My friend used to do it way too much. Now I turn it off when we're in the car.
My solution is simple. I just don't do it.
There are lots of ways to stop yourself and others from texting and driving. How will you stop? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
In a D.C. federal court, Roger Stone, longtime associate to President Trump, pleaded not guilty to charges that he lied to Congress and obstructed the House's investigation into Russian election meddling. Stone was ordered to return to court on Friday for a status hearing. Winter weather is hitting the country from coast to coast. USA Radio Network's Robin Walensky reports.
Nasty cold winter weather across the country, biting cold temperatures and blizzard-like conditions. Get this, minus 45 to minus 60 in Chicago and much of the upper Midwest. Snow could hit the south as well. Atlanta could also see snow, and the Northeast also expected to get hit with snow and ice. It is January, after all.
Three Texas police officers are stable following a shooting during a drug raid in Houston Monday night. You're listening to USA Radio News.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started.
HomeAdvisor.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. We'll even install your new blades while you wait. See better and drive safer. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Troops, welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom, the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome to the show Professor Paul Moreno from Hillsdale College. He teaches the U.S. Constitution, among other things, and that's what we're going to discuss. Paul, Hillsdale College is unique, in my opinion, for they insist that their students really understand, not just know about, the Constitution. Take a minute to explain that college philosophy.
Yeah, sure. The college's mission statement starts out with a statement that we're grateful for the blessings of civil and religious liberty. And the college was founded by people who were, just before the Civil War, trying to save the Union and save the Constitution. We're very proud of the fact that we had a higher percentage of our students who fought for the Union cause than any college of our size. So about 15 years ago, our current president, Dr. Larry Arnn, restored what had been a required course in the American Constitution. So all of our students, as part of our core curriculum, take a course in basically the political theory of the American Constitution.
There's, I guess, two ways to look at the Constitution. One is that it's a legal document that says what it says and it doesn't say what it doesn't say. And the other way is that it's sort of subject to interpretation by the Supreme Court and the words can mean all kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I teach constitutional history, and one of the worst things about our history is that what used to be understood as a document that could be understood by the people has now been regarded as the exclusive domain of judges and lawyers. So, you know, just restoring that idea that it's a people's constitution is one of the first orders of business.
Well, for sure. And when I have these conversations with people, I say, because the words don't mean anything anymore, your right to free speech could disappear. Or, ladies, you could suddenly have to wear burqas if 5 out of 9 Supreme Court justices say so. And that will get some people's attention. That's not what we want to talk about. The issue is, since we military people take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and to bear true faith and allegiance to the same, we need to know what the Constitution is that we're taking an oath to, because it's not a pledge to defend our country or the president. It's an oath to the Constitution. Why is the Constitution so special?
Well, that's in fact every part of the American government takes a similar oath. And that idea that it is as much the responsibility of the president or a member of Congress or a member of a state legislature to read and understand the Constitution, that's not just an exclusive domain of the Supreme Court. So I think everyone who takes an oath to support the Constitution has to have some understanding of what it is.
Well, indeed. So the Constitution, it almost is our nation, because if we follow it, the ground we're on or the name of the president doesn't mean anything. If we're following our Constitution, then we are the America that our founding fathers thought they were founding.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's so important to have fidelity to the Constitution as the thing that defines the American people, because we're unique in that being an American isn't defined by race or even language or where you were born. Rather, it's belief in certain founding ideas. And if you lose that, then the danger of fragmentation along lines of racial and ethnic identity, there's really nothing to stop that. So, yeah, the Constitution is what makes us a people. And you know, we have to make sure that that doesn't become something that's up for grabs.
You know, you just made a key point. Most of the world is tribal in nature.
Yep.
We aren't.
Right.
And it's this Constitution, if you want to call it that, that is our tribe, that is our claim to loyalty, right?
That's right. So we're a propositional nation. You're not born American. Anyone can become an American, provided you believe in the principles of liberty and equality in our founding documents.
Okay. Let's talk about what the Constitution says about our military. It doesn't say a lot, but what does it say? How do we military folks fit in? How does the Constitution speak to us, what we are, what we're supposed to do, who we work for?
Yeah, well, that requires, a proper understanding of the executive power in the Constitution. The president is commander-in-chief of the armed forces. The Constitution does give the president more discretion when he's dealing with foreign affairs than in domestic affairs. At the very beginning, the understanding was we primarily need a president in order to defend the country against foreign threats. And I think today when you see what President Trump is doing about the immigration issue, you have an issue that is sort of right on the border, literally, of domestic and foreign affairs. And a lot of the positions that Trump has taken about his powers as president, and which recently the Supreme Court has upheld, were quite in keeping with the idea that you need a strong executive power, especially when it comes to America being one nation in a world of other sovereign nations, not all of whom are friendly to us.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing our Constitution with Professor Paul Moreno. Now, part of this in the Constitution, and I think one of the great strengths, is the separation of powers. So that's why the president can have power and be strong and not be a threat, right?
Yes, and also the Constitution gives him enough powers to defend the prerogatives of his office against encroachments from the others, because before the Constitution, the problem was governors in the states were very weak, and the national government under the Articles of Confederation really had no executive. And you saw what happens when legislatures get carried away, when they sort of absorb all the powers of government into their hands. So the idea of separation of powers and also checks and balances among the three parts of government, we have a president who's able to defend his legitimate constitutional powers.
Indeed. And there is supposed to be checks and balances. And when some of the checks and balances, particularly the roles the Supreme Court taken, has gotten out of hand, at least by my understanding of the Constitution, what do we do about that? How do you get that back under control?
Well, a lot of it, the last time in which the legislature really, I think, was encroaching upon executive powers came in the 1970s in the aftermath of Nixon and Watergate. And so, if we're talking about defense especially, the War Powers Act of 1973 is an example of Congress encroaching upon the president's power in military and foreign policy. And really, that's an issue that has to be worked out between the political branches. The courts have, it's one area of American constitutional law that they've kind of stayed out of and haven't ruled on the constitutionality of the War Powers Act. So at a certain point, you have to let the people, through their elected officials, work out many of these problems. These are basically political.
And that's indeed the intent of the Constitution, that the political side will be handled by the elected officials.
Absolutely. That's why voting and representation are, you know, the fundamental constitutional institutions.
And that's why most citizens should but don't even know the names of most of the people that they voted for.
Unfortunately.
Much less hold them accountable.
Yeah. Or at least then get back in the 19th century where you had disciplined political parties that were able to, you know, connect the individual voter to the elected officials. I think one of the big problems we face today is the breakdown of parties as mediating institutions.
You know, that's very true. When I was growing up, I'm 77, the major way that you got information about politics was through the political parties.
Yep, and people's loyalty to their parties was something that was, you know, very, very important to them. It was like your family or your community, and you didn't split your ticket very often. It was part of a sort of a culture of American politics.
And that's okay with our Constitution. The Constitution wanted the Congress particularly, which is the very political aspect. That's where battles should be fought politically, right?
Absolutely. They're the deliberative body. And again, on things like foreign affairs and when you're facing emergency situations and crises in foreign policy, those are not very well taken up in large deliberative bodies. The Federalist Paper says over and over again, when it comes to foreign affairs, you need a single person who can act with decision and with speed. The presidency and the legislature have different talents and abilities, different roles to play in the constitutional system.
Indeed, that's true. There is more to discuss about our Constitution, and Professor Moreno will stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do every day. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
Fisher House is a huge part of the recovery for wounded, injured, and ill service members and veterans. They provide a comfortable, safe place for their families. It's not a hotel. These houses are located at military and VA medical centers all over the U.S. and around the world. They have a common kitchen, laundry facilities, a warm dining room, and an inviting living room, too. Help make a difference in the lives of military and veterans' families. Learn how you can help Fisher House today at fisherhouse.org.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Professor Paul Moreno from Hillsdale College about our nation's Constitution. Paul, you discussed about the separation of powers, executive, legislative, and judicial. There's also a separation of powers between state and federal, isn't there?
No, absolutely. And federalism is probably the most important structural feature of the original Constitution, and the one that has been weakened probably the most. In that today, Congress, since it's no longer limited to the powers that are listed in Article 1, Section 8, essentially uses the states as its administrative agents, mostly by threatening to cut off money if states don't do what the federal government wants them to do. We saw this most recently with Obamacare and Medicaid.
Yes, that certainly violates what I understand as a separation of powers that way. In my opinion, it has been worse in the past. It's not as bad now as it was 10 or 15, 20 years ago. But still, the federal government has a lot more power than anybody who wrote the Constitution had in mind.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, the Supreme Court under, well, first Chief Justice Rehnquist and now John Roberts, has for the first time in decades, really since the 1930s, begun to say that there are certain powers that the states have that Congress can overcome just by threatening to cut off funds or by imposing other restrictions, so that federalism isn't quite dead yet, and the Supreme Court has been, you know, sort of kept the door open to being sort of restoration of federalism.
Indeed. So we know that our military does exist. The Constitution provides for it. President's the commander-in-chief. Funding's got to come from Congress. The selection of certain people, I don't know how they decided that Congress has got to approve certain promotions and stuff, but that's an administrative type of thing, and I'm comfortable with that. Are there any aspects of the way that we're implementing our Constitution in control of our military that bother you?
Yeah, as I mentioned, the War Powers Act, which I think is unconstitutional, but you mentioned that ultimately the funding for the military has to come from Congress. And their trump card had always been their power of the purse. And so the War Powers Act was passed in 1973 while we were still in Vietnam. And the way we got out of Vietnam was that Congress just prohibited any funding for military operations in Southeast Asia. I think that was wrong and a terrible thing to do. But that was legitimately within their constitutional powers, not the War Powers Act. The Constitution has already provided all of the necessary tools for each part of the government to do its work.
Indeed. I periodically hear the complaint about the Constitution that it's too old, is written by people that didn't even know about cars, much less computers, and it can't apply today. But it does work today, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and there's no provision. And you know, Lincoln faced this argument in dealing with the Civil War. You know, was the Constitution adequate for, you know, crises like that? Could it maintain its own existence? And I think Lincoln is a great example of somebody who said, no, we don't need to depart from the Constitution. We just need to go back and restore it to the founders' original understanding of it. For Lincoln, it was the issue of slavery and the Union, the issue of secession. But those fundamental principles in the Constitution they never grow old.
And that's a key issue, the fact that despite what some people might say, in fact, it does work because it's the principles that count. They don't tell you whether to count votes with a pencil or a computer. They just tell you to have votes, and that works. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing our Constitution with Professor Paul Moreno from Hillsdale College. Okay, Paul, in my opinion, the Supreme Court has taken a whole lot more control, and as you mentioned, the last two chief justices have started reining some of that in. But the other day was the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. That was certainly a taking of power, writing of law, in my opinion, that shouldn't happen. If for those who think that the Supreme Court has taken too much power on itself, how does one go about that? Just elect enough Congress senators and presidents that will appoint lifetime appointment Supreme Court justices to get it turned around? How do you do that?
Yeah, historically, there have been two basic approaches. One is the one you mentioned. You know, you do it through personnel, with resignations and deaths. If the people repeatedly elect a government that fills the courts with people who want a decision overturned, that's really the most common way to do it. This is what Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when the Supreme Court was striking down New Deal legislation, he asked Congress for the power to add 6 seats to the court so he could pack it right away.
And yes,
that didn't work, but through the ordinary attrition, he was able to turn the court around. The more radical way, the one that we haven't dealt with very much historically, is there are plenty of provisions in Article 3 of the Constitution that allow you to change not just the size, but the jurisdiction of the federal courts. And that idea of reducing judicial power rather than just changing personnel is one avenue that we haven't explored very much. But again, the tools in the original Constitution are still there, even if they haven't been used very much.
So that's something that Congress would have to do.
Yeah, yep. And, you know, the Constitution, all it says is that there will be one Supreme Court. It doesn't say how many justices it'll have. And it has a very limited original jurisdiction. And its appellate jurisdiction is subject to exceptions and regulations that Congress can make. And they've done that on a couple of occasions, but not very often.
And that's a good thought. I hadn't thought about that perspective. One final question, just because this is a question that I carry around in my head every once in a while. How would we go about making appointments to the Supreme Court not lifetime appointments? Would that take a constitutional amendment?
Yes, that would require a constitutional amendment, although there's one theory that because the Constitution says that justices will hold their tenure during good behavior, what exactly good behavior means, and does it mean that they can only be removed by impeachment, is the predominant view, but there's another view that they could actually be removed by what was called a bill of address. And this is the way that Parliament does it in England, and several states have this provision, where they could be removed by a simple majority of both houses of the legislature. But again, that's one that has been a long time since anyone brought up that idea. But certainly a constitutional amendment that I think would provide for staggered term. Say you keep the court at 9 justices, but just have them serve 18-year terms, and then every 2 years you get a vacancy. And that's almost exactly the way that it's worked out historically. If you look at the number of Supreme Court justices, it's about half as many years as the country's been in business. Most presidents get 2 appointments in a term.
Okay, so in fact, the system is working okay with or without that.
Well, sometimes justices will serve for, you know, 6 years. And it is something of a crapshoot. And, of course, in recent years, the tendency has been to appoint justices much younger in hopes that they'll serve for 40 years. President Trump was very explicit about this. And, of course, life expectancy has gotten longer. And so they tend to be on the court a lot longer. Almost every president going back to, you know, probably Reagan, when he had 3 appointments in his 2 terms, that used to be a lot more common, where a president might get 4 or 5 openings on the court.
Okay. Paul, I really appreciate the way that you are making the Constitution and its role in our nation clear. How might listeners who might have some questions contact you or learn about Hillsborough College?
Oh, he'll just go to our website, hillsdale.edu. One of the things the college has is a large number of online courses. We have a version of our Constitution 101 course, some of our history courses, and a whole lots of other things. You know, you can get a little sort of insight into the whole liberal arts curriculum of Hillsdale just by these free online courses.
That's awesome. Paul, thank you for taking the time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation through making the Constitution clear to our citizens. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Here's our Stan Tall Troop Report. This is when we find an outstanding performance of duty and we get to honor this fine troop. Zoltan Z. Krumpecker enlisted in the Army in 1985 as a cannon crewman and joined the Special Forces in 1989. Following service in the Green Beret, he graduated from Ohio State University ROTC with a bachelor's degree in secondary education, commissioned in the military intelligence, and then graduated from Michigan State University with a Master of Arts. His assignments have included Korea, Fort Campbell, West Point, Fort Huachuca, Fort Gordon, Fort Leavenworth, Western Michigan University, Fort Bragg, and Fort Lewis. Following an assignment at West Point where he taught English, Colonel Krumpecker ported to the 1st Special Forces Group before serving as an instructor at the Army Command and Staff College at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. He served with Special Ops Task Forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said he feels his greatest accomplishment is being the husband to his wife, Tina, and daddy to Leah, Annie, and Jack. He's a real soldier with some good values. So stand tall, Colonel Krumpecker. Frontlines of Freedom and all of our nation's patriots salute you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour learning about Legacies Alive, a support for Gold Star families. Then we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from Garden State Film Festival. And, of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, Military History, and our Armed America Report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run. Run a couple of miles of wind sprints, outside or on a machine, if you live in snow like I do. Then grab some protein and rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.
At Budget Blinds, caring is in our DNA. It's the way we do business every day. It starts with exceptional customer service, a process that is centered around you. We listen to you, take the time to find out about your needs, then guide you through a beautiful selection of custom window coverings to find the very best options for you. Our commitment to caring continues throughout our local neighborhoods. We care for our homes and our communities. Budget Blinds supports so many different causes all across North America. We're your local neighborhood experts. We live and work right next to you, and we do it all for you. If that's the kind of personal service you've been waiting for, call and see for yourself. 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Or find us online at budgetblinds.com. While you're there, find out more about the Budget Blinds commitment to giving back at #BudgetBlindsCares. Each franchise independently owned and operated. Ask for details.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the 100in Medical Center. 100in Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. 100in Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call 100in Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.100inhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Longtime Trump associate Roger Stone is pleading not guilty in a D.C. federal court in the Mueller probe. Stone is accused of obstruction, lying to Congress, and witness tampering, to which Republican Congressman Peter King tells Fox News, let's see some of that evidence.
I'm not certain how strong the evidence is. It may not be. I think we have to see it in the full context of his testimony as to whether or not these were honest mistakes, whether it was gossip he was carrying on in his emails. And listen, if he's guilty of perjury, he's guilty of it.
The Midwest and Great Lakes are preparing for frigid temperatures colder than many have ever experienced. A polar vortex is traveling into the region, bringing air temperatures that will range between 20 and 40 below zero on Wednesday. Wind chills will make it feel like almost 60 below zero. In Atlanta, home of the Super Bowl on Sunday, well, they're expecting 2 inches of snow, and they're telling folks to watch out for black ice. This is USA Radio News.
Right now at O'Reilly Auto Parts, pick up a 5 1/4 ounce bottle of Lucas Fuel Injector Cleaner for $3.99. Clean and lubricate your fuel system while increasing miles per gallon with Lucas Fuel Injector Cleaner for $3.99 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Plus, earn double O rewards points on this purchase. Better parts, better prices every day. Limit supply. See store for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Three Texas police officers are doing okay following a shooting during a drug raid in Houston. Memorial Hermann Hospital Dr. Michelle McNutt says one of the cops is facing a long road ahead.
One gentleman suffered a gunshot wound to the face, was taken to the operating room last night, is currently recovering, and will undergo multiple other operations by our facial trauma team in the future.
The State of the Union is a go for next week. USA Radio Network's Robin Molinsky with the details.
The date set. President Trump will deliver his State of the Union address Tuesday night, February 5th, on Capitol Hill. Letters exchanged between House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the president.
Former Arizona Senator Republican Jeff Flake announced on Tuesday that he will not challenge President Trump in the 2020 Republican primary. Flake instead announced that he had signed as a contributor for CBS News. He did say, though, that he hopes someone does challenge the president on the Republican side. You're listening to USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
Democratic 2020 presidential hopeful Kamala Harris of California raised a few eyebrows Monday at a town hall when she vowed to eliminate all private health care insurance for approximately 150 million Americans if she's elected president. Former South Carolina Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy tells Fox News the process the Democrats are going through, it's the same one the Republicans had to do about 10 years ago.
We have a political process where the primary is controlled by the base. And that's true on the Republican side, mm-hmm. and it's true on the Democrat side. They're going to have to sort out what Republicans used to have to sort out. Do you go for someone you think is electable, like a John McCain or Mitt Romney, who wound up not being electable, or do you go with who the base picks? And the base picked Donald Trump, and he wound up winning. Now, are they going to go with Kamala Harris? Are they going to go with Joe Biden? They have the same issues that we've had during past presidential cycles. The candidate that I know the best is Tulsi Gabbard. And while we may not agree on issues, I don't think she's going to be pulled in any direction she doesn't want to go. And we'll see whether or not the Democrats have an appetite for authenticity as they go through the nominating process.
Gowdy was also asked about any possibility of South Carolina being in play come 2020, to which he said not in his lifetime, in his opinion. You can always find us on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inchamberradio.com. Brought to you by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning, 100in. This is Big C coming to you from 100inchamberradio.com. at the studio offices of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. Folks, I have several friends who are alumni of the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. This great institution allows cadets to further their education and earn a commission in our military if they want to, which about one out of every three does. Ranked as the number one public college in the South, the Citadel also offers master's degrees, graduate certificates, online or on campus. If you're looking for a bachelor or a master's degree, this